Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Above Politics Show. I'm Martin Bain.
And I'm Homer Fife. And Martin, I wanted to ask you something. We're partners here on a radio show, and we've been together for some time now. And I wanted to know if you were aware that I was a terrorist.
Well, I had heard something about this one, and of all the people I know, I've got to say you probably wouldn't be on the top of my list of being a terrorist.
Oh, but apparently, according to the Chief of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, I'm a terrorist, a domestic terrorist in every way, shape, and form. She came out with a memo, and in that memo, which was distributed to all the Homeland Security offices, she listed three prime candidates for domestic terrorism. Number one, anyone who believes in the Bible and biblical prophecy. Number two, anyone who believes in the right to life and is opposed to abortion. And number three, American veterans. So I serve my country, okay, for 5 years. I sweat, I bleed, I do everything I need to do and can do, and I follow orders, and I get an honorable discharge from the United States Marine Corps, and this wig-wearing stands up in front of people. And you know what? She not only made this comment, Martin, but she has stood up and defended this drivel that's coming out of her mouth. I can't believe it. I can't believe that somebody hasn't fired her and kicked her off the face of the planet.
I mean, I think, you know, something we've been touching on over the past few shows here, Homer, is accountability and being responsible. Yeah, I mean, you can, if you start to think about her, what she said a little bit, okay, the people who believe in the Bible, yeah, you could turn around and say, surely that should then also apply to anyone who believes in the Quran, who believes in the Book of Mormon and all those type of things. So you could rule that one out a bit when just because you're on one side of the debate for, you know, abortion, we've touched on that one. You can see the argument for saying that if you were to look at people who were more able to be homeland terrorists, those who had served are going to be in a better position because they will understand things about weapons, explosives and technology. So, you know, if you break them down, you can say, well, yeah, I should think in any country, in any democracy, the military and those who have served in the military have got to be seen as a threat to that democracy, because those are people who know, you know, like yourself, you know, like you've, you know, like you've intimated, you've in the US Marines, you know, you've served in the US Marines, there are probably things that you know that the vast majority of the American people don't know what to do. So clearly you could turn around and say, yes, anybody who has served in a frontline military unit could be regarded as a threat to the security of a nation. But to lump it in and say, oh, and by the way, if you believe in the Bible and if you hit one way of the abortion adds to it, I've got to say, it does seem a little crass of this person. And I
I'll be honest with you, Martin, I'm offended. I am deeply offended. I mean, how dare she call United States veterans, people who have, you know, I've been in uniform, Martin, since 1980. That's 29 years I've been in uniform for this country and served it in one capacity or another, and I still get up every single morning, and I still get in uniform, and I still go out there, and I do my job. And how dare this woman, how dare she stand up and intimate that I am some type of domestic terrorist, or that I would do anything to harm this country, or other people like me. And that's the problem, isn't it? It's people like her that don't have – and here's the thing that's irritating. It's not that she just stood up and said it. She sent this document – okay, she sent this document to her legal team, and her legal team said, might not want to do that. It's all right on Rush Limbaugh's homepage, all the links that you need to prove what I'm saying here. Her legal team says, Mr. Politano, you don't need to come out and say this. This is wrong, and you legally are interfering with people's free speech. There's First Amendment rights problems with what she says. And yet she stands up and she does it anyway. You know, oh.
But I think it comes back to something, and I saw a thread on I think it was Political Issues, and it was about I think one of the members had started a thread about why are our politicians so contemptuous of us, the electorate? And I have to think that, you know, this clearly shows that, you know, this woman is contemptuous of the people who have put her boss into office, which I suppose is something here slightly different, is that, you know, this woman has never been elected to this office. She was appointed by the President of the United States, whereas in the United Kingdom, the equivalent role to this, I would suspect, would be Home Secretary, and that is a person who has been elected as an MP and then appointed. So in the UK, if the Home Secretary, and unfortunately our Home Secretary, Jackie Smith, has been under pressure for some rather stupid things, some of the things she said and some of the things that she's done, whereas this woman has no accountability. She's not accountable to any electorate here.
No, the only person she's accountable to is Barack Obama, because he's the one that put her in place, and you don't think that do-nothing's going to do anything. I mean, it's probably how he feels. Look, and I'm sorry that I'm being so radical today, Martin, but this has really upset me, and I just, you know, because this hit me personally.
And I can see that, and there are many other people on AboveTopSecret.com who have served their country in many capacities. You know, people who have served in the Marines, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, who are, you know, National Guard, who are in the police, who are in the FBI, who are in the CIA. You know, and you actually have to think of it that, you know, does she then think that almost everybody, you know, a lot of people in the FBI will have served in the military before they join the FBI. I suspect a lot of people in the CIA probably have served somewhere. So, you know, is she also tarring potentially a lot of people in the FBI and the CIA with the same brush?
Exactly. And to come out and say that just and see exactly what you said, if you want to label religious extremists as being possible domestic terrorists, look, I don't have any problem with that, okay? Anybody that takes anything to the extreme has a problem, and they need to be watched. All right? It's just that simple. And I'm saying that as a conservative, where I believe the government needs to stay out of our business. But extremists are extremists. But just because you believe in the Bible, and her quote was, anyone who believes in end times biblical prophecy, which is basically, what, a third of the Bible. And that's the problem, isn't it? Because I believe in the Bible, that also makes me a terrorist, okay? And look, I'm not, and I listed abortion, and I'm not truly anti-abortion, all right? I think that if you outlaw abortion, it's going to go back to the alleyways with the coat hangers. So there needs to be some legal aspect to abortion. It just doesn't need to be to 15 and 16-year-olds without parents' consent, number one. And number two, if a woman gets pregnant and she wants an abortion, the federal government has no doggone business paying for it. All right, but I also don't think they should pay for her children, that she needs to get a job. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But the point of the fact is, what you said, this woman has no voter accountability. She's only accountable to the President of the United States because she is simply part of his appointed cabinet, as it were. And I just can't believe that she went against her legal team. Even the senior Democrat in the House Committee on Oversight, what's his name, Benny Thompson, he's a Democrat out of Mississippi, he wrote a letter to her saying that the report appears to have blurred the line between violent belief, which is constitutionally protected, and violent action, which is not. Even he sent her a letter saying she should not release this report. And yet, what does she do? She stands up and opens her big mouth and insults, what, 60% of the United States?
But the question you have to ask is, has she also insulted the President of the United States? Because clearly he got up and swore an oath when he took office. Does he not believe in God? Does he not believe in the Bible and what's said in the Bible?
And is he not the commander-in-chief of all the military forces? You're right. She's basically labeled him as a domestic terrorist.
Yeah.
Which, you know, for me, isn't all that big a stretch. But, you know, we can get into that later.
But, you know, clearly she sort of started at the top. And, you know, and it staggers me that, you know, there are people. And you're right. You raised a very good point. You know, is Barack Obama going to think, hang on a minute, I need to step up to the plate. I need to be accountable. I need to turn around and just say to this woman, guess what? It was nice knowing you. But guess what? You're at the door. But historically, we know that politicians across the globe rarely fire someone that they've appointed. They only do it when there's sort of no other course for them to do, rather than, you know, taking the obvious action of just turning around and saying, no, you messed up, you're at the door. So you have to think that unless, you know, Barack Obama continues to see so much flack, and the flack, as you've said, is a lot of this flack is coming from Democrats. It's not you would expect people like Rush Limbaugh to sort of jump on this one, because, you know, he is certainly Republican, so you'd expect him to do that. But clearly, I think there are a lot of Democrats who are very unhappy about what this woman has said. And you'd like to think that some of those people have the ear of the president and they're going to be whispering in his ear saying, this isn't good for you, Barrack. You have to do something about it.
I'm not sure, Martin, that she's not just flat out stupid. And I'm looking here where she was being interviewed. Give me just 1 second. Anyway, during an interview, she makes this comment. And now listen to this. This is her actual comment. Possible terrorist threats. Now, this is in reference to the pro-lifers. There have been extremist groups within the abortion debate that have committed violent acts, end quote. Now, here's a problem that I have with that. Okay, there have been. There absolutely have been extremist groups that have committed violent acts in every way, shape, and form about every single key issue. Now, how far away are we before she says, there have been extremist groups within the black community that have committed violent acts? How far away is that?
How far away, if you take that analogy, is she going to go potentially down to, you know, in the Islamic world, in the Jewish world, in the Mormon world, you know, and then you start to extend it and you say right to the extreme right, you know, less to the extreme left in the States, but, you know, how far do you go down this way? And I suspect she may have thought this was probably an intelligent thing to say, and then all of a sudden it's blown up in her face, and I'm sure at some stage we're going to get the comment of, but I was taken out of context. What I meant to say was this. And unfortunately, you know, Barack Obama, the Secretary of Defense for Homeland Security, will turn around and basically try and sort of be contemptuous of the American people and just say, guess what? Yeah, this isn't exactly what I meant to say. This is what I actually meant to say, and almost just try and push it under the carpet, which seems to be something that politicians, no matter where you sit in the world, seem quite comfortable. You know, they seem to treat the electorate as stupid, as if we don't realize that, hang on a minute, I don't think you thought of this just off the whim. You'd obviously been thinking about this for a while. And the fact, as you've sort of listed the references back to Rush Limbaugh's site, that, you know, this had gone for some kind of review with her legal team, and, you know, maybe some other senior Democrats had turned around and said, this isn't a good idea. She still decided to go and do it. It just turns around to say, either she's absolutely passionate that this is true, or she is absolutely contemptuous of the people that elected her boss. And shockingly, I have to think she is contemptuous of the people who elected her boss.
Yeah, and now I want to make a comment and then make an observation. The comment is for the listeners. If you look it up, it's a Department of Homeland Security report titled Right-Wing Extremism, Current Economic and Political Climate Fueling Resurgence and Recruitment. And that was the actual report that was leaked to the media. But the comment, or what I would like to point out here, Martin, is this is absolutely nothing. If you get down to the core of the problem with her comments that spouted out of her mouth, I can't even talk, I'm so upset. If you get down to the core of that, what it boils down to is, if you don't believe the way I do, then you're wrong. Well, I thought we did away with that when we became a free country. I thought that we were allowed to believe any way that we want to believe. But that's exactly what she's saying. She's saying that if I believe differently from her, she's going to label me as a domestic terrorist, and I'm going to be on a watch list. And the next thing you know, I won't be able to get on a plane and fly to Las Vegas because my name's on some watch list, because I'm a veteran. I don't 100% support abortion. And you know, when does this end, Martin? When does it end? When do you stop putting labels on people, especially people, the hundreds of thousands and millions of people that have gotten in uniform and defended this country? This is an insult.
I mean, you know, you do have to take this back a little bit and say, okay, so, you know, and I did read a report that, you know, the number of veterans from the D-Day landings grows less and less. So does that mean that, you know, anybody who survived from, you know, all the Allied forces who landed in, you know, Normandy, and particularly the American forces, is she trying to say that all of those soldiers whose, you know, comrades got blown to pieces, are they also considered a threat? Because they're obviously military veterans. Anyone who served in Korea, in Vietnam, in Grenada, in Panama, in two Gulf Wars, in Afghanistan. You know, I just think this is, I've got to turn around and say, you know, even I think this is an incredibly crass thing to say. Yeah, you can the ones on the Bible, I just think, you know, you've got to turn around and broaden it. It's not just people who believe in the Christian Bible. You have to open that up and say it's anybody, as you've quite rightly said, who takes a religious belief to extremes and is prepared to commit violence to enforce and, you know, bring notoriety to that religious belief. You know, we suffer from that in the United Kingdom and they suffer from that across Europe. I just think, shockingly, I don't think she's probably going to lose her job in the near future. Barack Obama will no doubt come out with the classic example. He has full confidence in her, and I suspect it'll be slow death. And you have to be thinking, the people in the Department of Homeland Security, how much confidence are they going to have in her now? So it's probably now just going to be snidey comments, leaks to the media, you know. And unfortunately, the best thing Barack Obama could do, if you're listening to this show, Barack, and both Homer and I believe you do, just do the honourable thing. Step up to the plate and say, I'm going to take responsibility. I'm accountable. This person's made a mistake. I fired them. It's simple.
Yeah, but it shouldn't even come to that, Martin, because let's just take an example of our last show. Okay, we actually discussed a gentleman in your country who made a simple mistake. He carried something into a meeting that was visible to reporters. They got a picture of it. It was a top secret memo. And when it was discovered, what's the first thing he did, Martin? Refresh my memory.
He offered his resignation.
Exactly. He took responsibility for his actions. He stepped up and he resigned. And this mouthpiece here, this Napolitano, she wouldn't even be in position to be opening her mouth if it wasn't for the same veterans that she believes are going to be domestic terrorists. I mean, why do we still have a free country? Why is your country still free, Martin? Because of the people that are willing to put a uniform on and fight to keep it free.
But if we, you know, and we sit on a conspiracy website, we've had, you know, David Icke on the show, who has sort of spoken about the New World Order. You know, they would turn around and say, hang on a minute, this is just an extension of what some people on ATS and people in the globe at large believe would be part of the New World Order agenda, that, you know, this is the kind of control that if you want to have a single global government, they have got to be able to clamp down on anybody who can potentially put up any kind of resistance. And you have to think, you know, there are lots of veterans, not just in the States, but across the world. And they, if you were trying to set up a global government, you would either want to bring them on side, or you'd want to muzzle them or stop them from doing anything. You know, if you take that conspiracy theory on board and you accept the New World Order, you can actually see the logic of where this is going.
Oh, I see it. But to me, it looks like we're taking one step forward and 10 steps back, because I thought that the world had progressed. Now, not the entire world, but the majority of the free world had progressed beyond the, if you don't think like I do, then you're a criminal, or you're a terrorist, or you need to be enslaved, or you need to be arrested. I thought we had gotten past that. And here we have a Democrat administration. We have a Democrat House. We have a Democrat Senate. The many lauded Democrats whose entire stance is on freedom of the people. We're for the small man. These people aren't for the small man. They're trying to say the small man is a domestic terrorist, because how many people that are poor go into the military in order to survive, in order to provide for their family? I'd say quite a few.
You're right, and I'm sure it's the same. I'm sure it's the same in the United Kingdom. I'm sure it's the same across Western Europe. It's the same across the rest of the world, that, you know, people don't necessarily join the military just to defend their country. They will join it because, you know, it can be seen as a very good career. You know, it gives you a lot of security. You're going to be fed. You know, there are people who excel in the military environment. You know, they like the structure that being in the forces gives them. So, you know, turn around and just sort of label everybody, I just think it's, I'm staggered. And I think we'll just have to see how long the current Department of Homeland Security Secretary remains in office.
Yeah. All right. Now, to calm me down, let's calm me down a little bit.
Calm me down.
Yeah, India has had its second election day. How cool is that?
It has, and, you know, you have to think India is the largest democracy in the world, and it is a democracy. You know, I think somewhere like over 500 million people get to vote, which is a staggering figure. And you know, they get to vote. Yes, India isn't a country, is a country, you know, not without its problems. You know, there have certainly been some terrorist incidents around their elections. And the reason that India doesn't have a single election is because the country is so huge and there are just such a huge number of people that want to vote. So they, I think for the next 4 or 5 weeks, will be having one day a week where different parts of the country will vote. Those votes are all kept secure until after the final voting day, and then they're elected and then they're counted. But I just think it's absolutely staggering to think, you know, here is a country with over 500 million people. I mean, it's a huge number who get to vote in the country. Yeah, and they've got their fair share of terrorists. They've got Maoist terrorists who have been, you know, involved in terrorist activities, have killed election officials, have killed people. But that's still not going to stop, you know, a huge...
Well, Martin, I think that what you're talking about here goes to India's credit. I mean, over here, you can run for electoral office, and you're not going to have any problems like that. But over there, it's almost life-threatening to stand up and run for office, and yet they still do. They still line up. They still vote. I'm impressed.
I am, and I've got to turn around and say, you know, and then I just want to talk about another country. South Africa is also about to go to the polls as well, and has elections as well. And that's a country that has, you know, changed dramatically since Nelson Mandela was free and became their president. And yes, the current leader of the ANC, Jacob Zuma, yes, there is some talk that he doesn't have the best record on the planet.
It's been mildly, isn't it?
but hang on a minute. You can turn around and start pointing fingers at almost every elected leader across the world. But that's another country that, you know, where, you know, went from, you know, probably 90-95% of its population not having the right to vote under apartheid to everybody in South Africa having the right to vote. And I was just going to put a nice little pop in here. What do these two countries have in common? They have the British Empire that sort of created their countries. You know, you have to look around the world and say, the world's biggest democracy was a British sovereign territory up until 1949. South Africa was a British sovereign territory. There's something good about what the British Empire brought to the world. And I know I'm going to be flamed for those comments, but hey, I really don't care.
Well, I'll tell you, somebody needs to step up in South Africa, because last time that I looked, they had an inflation rate of something like 300%. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and unfortunately, yeah. But mind you, if you go north of South Africa, go to Zimbabwe, you know, I think Robert Mugabe would be grateful to have an inflation rate of 300%. He probably thought he'd brought his economy under control. But, you know, South Africa is a country that has a very long history, is very rich in natural resources. But from a sort of everybody having the right of having the ability to vote, it's fairly recent. So, you know, I think we have to realize that this is a country that's sort of been totally free and democratic, you know, for not very many years. And I think it's come a long way, you know, since the days of apartheid, and credit to, you know, Nelson Mandela, who sort of put it all there. And this is proof that democracy does work. You know, in some respects, we may disagree with Jacob Zuma, but he is going to probably be elected to the top job in South Africa by a majority of the people in South Africa.
A huge majority.
And I can't argue with that one. You know, if the people of a country vote for somebody and we and the rest of the world can look at it and say, yep, this was generally a fair election, who among us can turn around and say, guess what, we don't like this guy's politics? You know, you may not like Hugo Chavez, you may not like Raul Castro, although he's not been elected, but he's, you know, but these people have all been elected. You cannot argue that these people have been elected.
No, you can't. And budding Democrats, democratic countries like this impress me. And, you know, Zuma, you can say what you want about Zuma, but you know what? He did survive 10 years during the apartheid era in the political system that South Africa. So, you know, he's got some staying power. He's got some grit in his gut, and he's 67 years old now, so he's probably not going to be engaged in too many of the sexual scandals that dogged him all those many years ago. So, you know, maybe he is exactly what they need. I hope so. I truly hope so.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And if you've agreed with anything that Homer and I have said, great, find the show thread and post away. If you've disagreed and you fundamentally think that, you know, Homer and I have lost the plot, you can post away. We'll see that. We'll jump on board and we'll be more than happy to enter into a debate with anybody via the forum.
Absolutely. This is Homer Fife, and thanks for listening to the Above Politics Show.
Absolutely. And I've been Martin Bain, and we'll see you next time on the Above Politics Show.
Hey, Martin and Homer. This is Neff with the UK Budget Roundup. It's good to be back on the show. Wednesday, 22nd of April, saw the announcement of the UK budget for the next 12 months. And ever since, the current Chancellor of the Exchequer, Alistair Darling, has been defending his position in the media whilst being put under scathing attack by both the Conservative Party, the Liberal Democrats, and financial institutions and specialists. Indeed, the notion that the budget was set to aid the recovery of the British economy is an intriguing one, to say the least, as what the Chancellor gave, he took away in two extraordinary steps. The first was the introduction of a 50% tax bracket for those people earning over £150,000 a year. Initially, that sounds like a good idea, but when you think about it, quite how the economy is supposed to be stimulated by its richest and most successful people scurrying out the door to find tax havens in other countries is beyond me. The second was an increase, yet again, in fuel duty by 2 pence per litre, something that affects both rich and poor households alike, and also affects business operating costs and industry, increasing overheads, and thus affecting the consumer on every level. In times when money is hard to find, expecting people to find and spend more of it seems to fly in the face of all sane thought. It seems that the man assigned to shepherd the UK economy through the current financial crisis cannot understand that increased overheads are passed on to the consumer, meaning food, clothing and other associated items are likely to increase in price, and an increase in price means that people are less likely to buy. Another interesting supposed economic incentive introduced was the adoption of a scheme where the government will pay £2,000 towards the cost of the purchase of a new vehicle, but only if the old vehicle being exchanged is 10 years old or over and is being scrapped. And while that sounds like a good idea initially, again, when you delve deeper into it, the farce becomes apparent. Firstly, people driving cars that are 10 years old or more do so for a reason, and it's usually because they can't afford a new car. Knocking £2,000 off the price of a £10,000 car still means the prospective purchaser has to find £8,000. No mean feat in times of economic crisis when the banks are reluctant to lend the money that they never actually had in the first place. It's far cheaper and easier to travel around in a £500 junk pile that might last 2 years and still have some money for the fuel which the government have put the tax upon. Secondly, the government isn't actually contributing £2,000. They're contributing £1,000 and expecting the auto industry to contribute the other £1,000. Yep, that's right. At a time when the automotive industry is appealing to governments across the world for handouts to keep themselves afloat, the government of the UK expects them to pay people to buy their produce. And how will they recoup the money? Well, the only way to do that is to increase prices, negating the effects of the reduction. And although similar schemes have been introduced in the European mainland with some success, I'm very sceptical of how it will be received here. To summate, the big figures from the budget stacked up like this. The UK economy is predicted to lose 3.5% of its size in the next 12 months and will not recover until 2011. The UK's debt racks in at a massive 79% of its overall gross domestic product. The overall deficit in the government's coffers is increased to £175 billion and is predicted to fall to £97 billion by 2012 or 2013. That leaves a nearly £90 billion hole that has to be filled from somewhere in the coming years, and the only place it's likely to come from is more taxes. In short, the UK's economy is in its worst state since the end of World War II, when we had to rebuild and begin to repay our war debts. It's time for us Brits to tighten our belts for sure. That's all for me, so back to you in the studio.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.